BPI presents Pride Connection, sponsored by Blind LGBT Pride International, Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern on ACB Media 1 or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Pride Connection. Today we would like to talk about representation in film and TVs and sitcoms, what we saw that inspired us, what we wish we could have seen, what we would like to tell the media about how best to represent us and how far we still have to go and how far we've come. So, to open us up, I would like for those here to introduce themselves and think about a film or a sitcom series or two that you saw that really inspired you, that made you want to be a better person, or who reflected what you wish to be.
This is Tristan Snyder. The first thing I ever saw that had LGBT representation in mainstream media that felt like, oh my God, somebody's actually, you know, paying attention and trying to give us a space in a normal sitcom type setting. And a lot of people say that's Will and Grace. For me, it was not. For me, it was Modern Family. And that was, I think, one of the largest needles that moved that dial toward acceptance in the U.S. I will say that there were some flaws, there were some stereotypes that they may not have wanted to, in retrospect, maybe it wasn't as great, but it did move that acceptance needle. The fact that one of the characters, Cam, was not gay as an actor, Eric Stonestreet. He said he was gay for pay. But the other one, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, is actually a gay actor. And that was great. My second piece is the other extreme. It's perfect representation by an actual person who is, in this case, both gay and blind, and that is the way he looks. The movie, though it didn't get a lot of mainstream play, I think partly because it is entirely subtitled, the main character was actually a visually impaired actor and actually gay. So I think that makes a big, big difference. And it made me feel seen in a way that it's nice to feel like you exist when you're watching your media. So
thank you very much.
All right,
for that.
I guess I'll go next. Anthony Corona here. And I'm going to go in two directions too. The first one was what they like to call the worst kept secret, and so very interestingly portrayed, not quite real, but not completely camp. Years later, Elizabeth Montgomery did an interview and she said, because that's the only way he would play it. You know, they wrote the lines and then he turned it into what it was. And that's Uncle Arthur on Bewitched. That was such a great,
yes.
You know, there were so many denied, like underlying things that they were telling you in the jokes and in the way he worded things. And he was completely gay, but they never said it. They never discussed it. And years later, you know, they finally admitted, yes, that was what we were doing. So my hat's off to Paul Lynde. You know, he had that snide, campy everythingness about him. And, you know, I had no idea growing up why I just thought he was the best, and then Dora was the drag queen. So, you know, it was just like, hello. How did you not know? But I digress. The other thing I actually want to touch on tonight is soap opera. And, you know, for those listeners, longtime listeners know, I also do a soap opera podcast, and I've been watching since I'm 3 years old. But the most real depictions of LGBTQ relationships I've seen in the visual medium has been on soap opera. The first lesbian relationship was on All My Children. The first transgender character and coming to terms with that whole transition was on The Bold and the Beautiful. The first gay wedding was on Days of Our Lives. Sunny and Will. But it was so normal. It was such a celebration like any other wedding, and it was grand, and it was soap opera, and it was awesome. But honestly, soap operas have been paving the way for LGBTQ characters for, you know, like 30 years now. It was major headlines when All My Children had its first lesbian character, and now there are gay couples on every show in various iterations, including, like I said, transgender on The Bold and the Beautiful. Those are two for me.
Anthony, before we move on, can you address the most recent General Hospital reveal that kind of everybody knew, but just the way that it was handled, to my mind, was exceptional.
One of the main characters who has been on since she was a teen, and we have watched her marry, love, die, and birth three children. A couple of years ago, they did a bullying storyline with her youngest son. And in the course of it, there were just a lot of layers that were done so well for that storyline as well, setting us up for what recently happened. And what recently happened was he was baking in the kitchen, and his mom comes in, and they're talking about other stuff. And she very just with no anything, I saw you talking to this boy, blah, blah, blah. And it's so natural and so beautiful. And she's like, I'm happy for you. Have fun with it. And I was in tears with just like, oh, my God, they didn't make a big deal of it. And it was such a big deal. So you saw it too, right, Tristan?
I read a transcript. I didn't see the episode, but it was just beautiful. And I thought, God, you know, this is how it should be. Someone in media actually, instead of amping it up for drama, they did it the right way. They did it the way that it should be, that people should use as a model with their own kids when they come out. I really was impressed.
You know, one of the first gay couples that lasted was on General Hospital, and that's his uncle. So at some point we'll probably see scenes like that too, and I'm really looking forward to them.
Thanks so much. Who would like to share next?
I can go. I've never really been a major sitcom watcher, but there are two movies, I guess, for me. They're very different types of movies, but I have to go back to my favorite movie of all time. Anybody who knows me well knows that it's Fried Green Tomatoes. I saw that movie for the first time when I was 16, and it was before the audio description track got added, because I had downloaded it a number of years later with audio description from Blind Mice Mart or something. But that movie, I loved the character of Iggy. I mean, at that time, like, that was my complete fantasy. Somebody who was really brazen and who was strong and who didn't take any nonsense and who was confident, but at the same time, she was quite vulnerable and afraid to lose her emotions to anybody. If anyone has seen the movie, one of the first things that happens, I don't think I'm giving anything away, this movie's like 30 something years old now, is that she sees her brother get run over by a train, and, you know, and it's traumatizing to her. But the relationship she has with another woman named Ruth in the movie is understated. And I have to wonder whether the movie had been made 20 or 30 years later, how different their relationship might have been on camera. But the truth of the matter is that the book it's based on, Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, it's obvious what the relationship is between them, that it's romantic, but it's also really understated. It's hard to know, but I felt like that movie in a lot of ways just sort of gave me this sense that it was possible to have a meaningful, loving relationship with another woman, even if it was just in film. But I have to say, I think that's the one movie still to this day, I have never cried as hard as I did when Ruth passed away. I was inconsolable when Ruth passed away. And there's just so many pieces of that movie. I think in my life since I was 16, I've watched that movie probably 15 times over the years. And whenever I'm having a rough go of it, or whenever I encounter someone who hasn't seen it, it's always Fried Green Tomatoes, because I think there's so much in that movie that we can learn from. The other movie, which I rarely hear people talk about anymore, is Brokeback Mountain. I saw that in the theater a couple of times, actually. And what I like about that movie is you have one character who honestly ruins his life because he's unable to to really sort of be vulnerable and go with his feelings. And he thinks that he needs to act a certain way, that he needs to put up a front, you know, and he ends up marrying a woman and has a couple kids, is unable to be there for his family. His male love interest ends up trying to do the same thing, also is miserable, and they sort of carry on this long distance relationship for years on end. Thank God for audio description in this movie, but one of the scenes that is horrifying, but also one of the gentlemen ends up being violently killed because it's discovered that he's gay. But even when that happens, you understand that for both of them, I think their lives would have been so much different and so much less fraught with frustration and anger had they been able to go with how they felt, had they been able to sort of be true to each other in terms of who they were. And so for me, that movie, I mean, I think it's been a representation of the fear that people had in the early 60s to early 70s, particularly in the South, but also what's possible if you don't allow your fears to stand in the way of building something that is, you know, strong. That movie's always been sort of like a cautionary tale to me. So those are the two films that really stand out the most, you know, in my life in terms of depictions.
Thank you so much, Leah. Who would like to go next? I think we have two people who haven't shared yet.
I was going to mention Brokeback Mountain too, so I'm glad you mentioned it, Leah, because I saw that and I remember people were, why are you seeing that? And I saw it with somebody else. And it wasn't described when we saw it. It was a long time ago. And then Moonlight is another movie they thought about. Those are the two I can think of at the moment.
Thank you very much. And is Bryn still with us? Would you like to share?
I have a lot of people on my list. Everybody on my list is trans, and most are trans feminine. And I would say the first trans woman that I ever saw on TV is right when I needed to see it, because it was kind of when I was starting to realize that I have to do something about transitioning at some point in my life, but it was long before I was actually ready to do anything about it. Laverne Cox as Sophie Burset in Orange is the New Black was my first, like, oh my God, it's a trans woman on my TV. Oh my God, you know, and it was just like a moment of realization that there's somebody who I can relate to on TV who's living their life, and it was just amazing. So that was the first person that I ever saw. The hottest person that I ever saw was on Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Jesse James Keitel as Captain Angel on Star Trek Strange New Worlds is a space pirate who's also trans. And that combination of like hot trans femme and space pirate is just like, oh my gosh. So that was a really great thing to see on TV. And made me very happy. And then the last one for now, until we come back around and maybe do more, is Yasmin Finney on Doctor Who in the 60th anniversary three-episode special. And there was a character named Rose, who is a trans teenager. And she was featured in episodes 1 and 3 of the Doctor 60th anniversary set of episodes, and I anticipate that she might be showing up more. And then I don't remember the actress's name, but there's actually another trans woman that is going to be in the next season of Doctor Who. We got to see a glimpse of her playing a guitar in a bar, and I looked her up right away because I was like, oh my gosh, I think she's trans. So we're getting another trans woman in Doctor Who in upcoming episodes, and also a trans man. Unfortunately, I don't know their names, but I'm very excited to see Doctor Who representing so many different people in the queer spectrum. So yay for Doctor Who.
Well, before we move too far away from what you just brought up, first of all, Jesse James Keitel is amazing. I first saw her in Big Sky, which was a detective series on ABC where she was initially part of the storyline where these young women got kidnapped by a psychopathic trucker. Initially, it looked like they were going to be trafficked, and then it turned out that there was some other stuff that happened, and it was wow. I mean, it was really, really intense, and she was absolutely phenomenal in that role. But I do want to circle back to Star Trek for a second, if I can, because yes, she was amazing in that pirate role, and we have to give kudos to Star Trek Discovery for so many things. They're entering their last season on April 4th, and they have in the crew a gay couple, Star Trek's first gay couple that was openly gay, Dr. Culber and the engineer Paul Stamets. And that was really amazing to see as a gay Trekkie. That was special. Then they went even further. We got Jet Reno, who is a lesbian, played by the amazing Tig Notaro. Absolutely hysterical. So much fun. And then we have Blue Del Barrio, who is non-binary, and they are playing Adira Tal. And Adira is the first human who hosts a Trill symbiont. They're just fabulous. It's such a great character. And they were partnered with a Trill. That's where they got their symbiont. That's a whole different conversation, but they got hooked up with this Trill named Gray. Gray is played by Ian Alexander, who is a trans man. It's so good to see all this wonderful representation, and the acting from all of these people is fabulous. They're so good. And the storylines are excellent, and they don't treat it like it's a special thing. They just do it. It's so fantastic.
It really is. And I was telling my roommate, Jaden, Star Trek Discovery is the gayest Star Trek that I've ever seen. And just so much queer representation. One of the funniest things that I ever saw, I'm just going to say it now, spoiler, sweetie, for anyone who hasn't seen Star Trek Discovery. You might want to plug your ears for like 10 seconds, but when Jet Reno sort of disappeared from the show for a few episodes, it was a kind of a long stretch of time that we didn't see her. And then she showed back up and she was like, I was, you know, ass deep in wires and stuff, fixing crap on the ship. What's been going on? I've been sort of like just like in the Jeffries tubes doing stuff. And I'm totally just like unaware or oblivious to what's been going on. And so they just sort of showed back up. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like something an engineer would do. Like they would just kind of disappear for a while and duck their head back out and be like, so what did I miss? It was great.
So that sounds really good. For those of us who are uninitiated and have never seen Star Trek, what should we start with? Is there a first ever series or movie that was released? And where can we see it? Where should we start?
I would say that there is no place you must start. What we're calling New Trek, which began with Discovery, was the sort of relaunch of the Star Trek franchise, which had been quiet for quite some time. And Discovery was sort of the new entry into that. So you could start with Discovery, and you would not be lost. It's a good show. They tend to wear their heart on their sleeves. It's kind of a departure from older Star Trek in that they focus more on the characters' internal struggles. In a way, the Discovery is the ship, but it's also about the internal journeys of these people. So that's, I would say, you could start there, and you could go on with New Trek. There are five New Trek series which are involved there, and Lower Decks, which also has, by the way, a bisexual character in the lead. Tawny Newsom plays...
Are you talking about Mariner?
Yes, thank you, God. Tawny Newsom plays Mariner, who is sort of the lead character in this ensemble cast. And yeah, so that's pretty neat. And she ends up with a girlfriend in one of the series of that. And then Strange New Worlds, which is amazing, as Bryn said earlier with that episode. And just overall, that series is amazing. And let's see, there's Prodigy, which is aimed more toward kids, but it's still good Star Trek and still a really fun story for everybody. I feel like I'm missing... Oh, Picard. Picard's kind of a fan-wonky series. I wouldn't recommend starting there. And what was the last one? The last series.
You said Discovery?
Yes, Discovery. I would start with Discovery with New Trek for sure.
Okay.
And if you want to start with the old Star Trek, the original series is indeed just called Star Trek, and that's Captain Kirk and Spock and all those famous folk. And there's the Next Generation with Picard, and You can you know, jump into Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise and all that if you want to. I mean, they're amazing. They're wonderful, and they have really fantastic stories. They hold up over time. You really can't go wrong just sort of diving in. But if you want to see representation and you want to see how far we've come, I would start with Discovery.
Very good.
My answer to that is Star Trek The Next Generation doesn't have a ton of representation, but it might be more some people's speed in terms of, you know, the kind of storytelling. There are some episodes in Star Trek The Next Generation that talk about gender and sexuality, but usually it's kind of coded in a way. So, for example, one of the characters is Commander Data, and he is an android, and he decides that as part of trying to be more human, he would like to have offspring. And so he creates a child of himself that's another android. And I may be getting some of the stuff wrong because I'm not as good at remembering all the details as Tristan is. But there's stuff in there about, because the child is an android, they get to choose their gender. And so it's really kind of like a bit of a trans allegory a little bit. In that, you know, this android was born genderless and they get to choose, which is kind of cool. So it's like a maybe more of a non-binary allegory, which is kind of cool. But yeah, so TNG is kind of more of a sort of like a old school, more even paced, not quite as gritty, not quite as dark, not quite as much, you know, drama for drama's sake sort of storytelling. So some people may be more comfortable in that universe. I would also say, for those of you who are interested in Doctor Who, the same question comes up with Doctor Who, because it's so massive and immersive and stuff. People ask, you know, where should I start in Doctor Who? And there isn't really a right answer to that. It's kind of wherever you start is wherever you start. But you can probably get away with starting with the new Doctor Who stuff. So the stuff that started in 2005. And then if you decide that you like that, you can always go back and watch the older classic stuff from the 80s and 70s and 60s. And mm-hmm. and you'll certainly enjoy that. But there's way more representation in New Who, including, you know, like Captain Jack Harkness, who is pansexual, who's one of my favorite characters, played by John Barrowman. So, okay.
Who is gay, by the way.
Yeah, and he's gay. The actor is gay.
Yes, and he actually auditioned for Will in Will and Grace back when they were taking auditions. And the producers of Will and Grace, the casting director at Will and Grace, said, "You're not gay enough." And so they hired a straight guy to play the gay
guy. Wow. Mic drop there.
So I think Tristan and I have monopolized the show enough with sci-fi talk. Okay. But yeah.
All right. Well, real quick, before I introduce another topic, I just wanted to say that I started coming out probably around 2018, and I think I was rather late to the streaming game than most. I used to get DVDs sent to me in the mail via Netflix for probably 3 or 4 years prior to 2018, when I finally broke down and got the online streaming version of Netflix. And I was having a bit of a renaissance, exploring stories from people of different ethnic backgrounds and different cultures and other countries, and also exploring a lot into feminism, and also investigating what is it like to be gay or LGBT or queer. And there were three shows that stuck out to me as really grabbing my attention in that regard, because they had all around good stories and they were usually representative of other groups as well. One was One Day at a Time. It was a Hispanic family. There was a single mom, a grandma, an abuela, and two children living in an apartment. The older girl was queer, and the younger boy was a young boy. And their adventures, and just watching Elena do her thing, and Elena dates a non-binary person named Sid. Their storyline was kind of special, and just watching that family navigate that with grace was very good. Also, the other show was Atypical. Now, I don't know, I can't speak for people on the autism spectrum, so I can't speak to how they represented Sam. When I watched Sam, however, I could relate to a lot of his social dilemmas, that I ran into the same exact issues because I had very low vision and could not see well. I couldn't see people's faces. I couldn't see their body language. I couldn't seem to connect on the same wavelength. I couldn't make eye contact and bat my eyelashes at someone from across the room. But Sam's sister, Izzy, was a badass. She was queer, and she ran track, and she, I don't know, kind of had a lot of stress and seemed to manage it well and come out the other side okay, and was very confident and carried herself very strongly. And so that was an important show. And the third one was The L Word. I considered that homework, to do my homework once this started making a little more sense and find out if this really was a thing for me. Now, looking at it now, The L Word is, the original show is very flawed. It has a lot of representation problems, particularly around the trans characters. But I guess for its day, it was something rather than nothing. And one last thing before I turn it to the next topic, I wanted to say that I saw a movie that made quite an impact on me called Desert Hearts last year. We have an independent, kind of very gay movie theater close to home here in St. Pete that's called Green Light Cinema. And they show a lot of indie films, a lot of old classics. It's not the place you go to see the latest blockbuster, but they have drama workshops and lots of other things. They have orange floors and green walls and Christmas lights framing the perimeter of mirrors on the walls. So it's very camp. And I saw this movie there called Desert Hearts. It's about this woman that wants to divorce her husband, and back in the day you had to move to Nevada to do it. So she moved to Nevada and she stayed at this boarding house. And I forget exactly how it went, but she started to get feelings for the woman who ran the boarding house. And they kind of had like a secret dating or affair or whatever you'd call it. But somebody found out and tried to shame her. But the divorcee tried to get the housekeeper, the innkeeper, to come with her as she was getting back on the train to go to San Francisco. And the innkeeper kept saying, no, 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 I can't come. I got my life here. My world is, you know, right here. But then, right as the divorcee was going to get on the train to move on to San Francisco, the innkeeper jumped on the train right behind her. So I guess it had a happy ending after all. So those are just some movies that had a positive impact.
So Jessica, you were talking about The L Word just a few minutes ago, and I watched The L Word as well, but not the version that you watched. So I started with The L Word Generation Q, and there were two characters in that series that made me really, really happy. And this was kind of one, you know, other than Laverne Cox in Orange is the New Black, this was kind of my first big ensemble cast of characters where a couple of them were trans. And so it was so cool to see both a trans woman and a trans man in this series. But in The L Word Generation Q, we had Jamie Clayton, who played Tess Vanderberg. And she was also in Sense 8 as Nomi, if you ever saw Sense 8, which was really good. And then also in The L Word Generation Q, we had Leo Sheng, who played Micah Lee. And Micah Lee was a trans man. And oh my God, you want to talk about feeling really represented? You know, seeing Shane, who is one of the main characters of the original cast, who is very, 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 very hot, hooking up with a trans woman who is also very, 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 very hot. I was just like in my own little world going, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to bring up the L word, Generation Q, since it's related to the original L word. They do kind of fix a lot of the problematic stuff with trans characters. And one of the trans characters that really got treated badly in the original L word, Max, and I don't remember who plays Max, but he shows up in the new series, and they do kind of address some of the crap that happened to him. So yeah, anyway, onward and continue on with the rest of what we're doing. I just wanted to get those two things in.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I appreciate that. Would you like to share, Donald, or would you like to go later?
The one sort of documentary type show that comes to mind is called Color Me Violet. And it's a retrospective of all the sort of lesbian and gay characters that have appeared in Hollywood movies. And it's very interesting. It also looks at the sort of subtle nuances between male and female characters that might not have been outwardly characters of LGBTQ, but there was the hint that, oh, there's something going on behind those two guys. So it's very interesting to see this Color Me Violet.
Thanks so much. And that's actually a great segue into our next topic. I wanted to ask all of you if there were things that maybe you wish you had seen, or even today, gaps in representation that are lacking, and or we talk about things being quote unquote queer coded, or some people even say that a particular studio is queer baiting, meaning they'll drop little breadcrumbs just to give someone something to be sort of ambiguous, but they won't actually come out and make a character openly queer. So as not to upset the family audience, if you will. So were there things that were queer-coded that you had to read into a lot, or were there things that you really wish that you would have seen?
Yes. It took me a while to figure it in some ways. But there were a couple of coded relationships. So a little, I hate to drag us back to Star Trek for those of you who aren't interested, but I think the topic is, in this case, lends itself to it. Star Trek Voyager was written and proposed by Jerry Taylor and a man named Michael Piller. And Michael Piller is gay, and he wanted gay representation, or at least LGBT something, some kind of representation in Star Trek. Well, Rick Berman, who was the sort of showrunner and main executive producer for all of Star Trek at that time, just flat out said no. He said, nope, nope, nope. So Michael Piller went, all right, if you're going to be that way, then I'm going to code a couple of people, and we're going to change some of these relationships a bit. And so in one case, in Deep Space Nine, there was a deep, deep sort of code for Dr. Bashir and a character named Garak, who was a Cardassian. He claimed to be a tailor, but he was a spy. And Andrew Robinson, the actor who played Garak, later told fans, yes, I played him as queer, and I played him as being interested in Dr. Bashir. And that was a very interesting, it was so interesting. And I got the vibe, even when I was a teenager watching it for the first time, I got the vibe that, oh, Garak likes him. I think there's more going on here than just, playing spycraft. There's something here that's bigger than that. And then the other relationship that was coded in that way was on Voyager. That's the show that Michael Piller helped to invent. And that was the relationship between Seven of Nine, who was an ex-Borg drone, played by Jeri Ryan, who is an amazing actress. She's really quite impressive. And the captain, Captain Janeway. There was a really interesting relationship there. And it did feel more intimate than just a captain and a crew member, or even two friends. It was very special, I felt, and I kind of got the vibe, you know. And it later on in Picard, in Star Trek Picard, which is part of New Trek, Jeri Ryan's character, Seven of Nine, she comes back. She comes back and plays in that series. And she actually is in an open relationship. She is openly in a relationship with the actress Michelle Hurd. Her character is called Raffi. And they get together. They are a couple. And there's actually an audio drama that is based on that series where Michelle Hurd and Jeri Ryan star in that audio drama. And they are a couple in the story. So it's really nice to see that they are able to be open now. But it was definitely, there were definitely times when things were coded queer for sure.
There's coded characters, right? And then there are movies and TV shows which are an allegory for something. So they don't come right out and say it, but it is. For example, The Matrix is a good example of a movie that never said anything about transness, but it's so totally like, first of all, it's created by two trans women that are sisters, but also it's like, I am Mr. Anderson, and I live in a world of dullness, and I know that there is another world out there that where I could be my true, authentic self, but I have to set myself free from the shackles of society first before I can ever dare, you know, live in that world of freedom. That's The Matrix. It's also being trans. There are other movies that kind of hint towards transness, but they never really ever say the person is trans or you know, whatever. Like Mulan is a good example. A lot of trans men love that movie because, you know, it's essentially about someone who was AFAB, you know, assigned female at birth, and they are identifying as a man. And in the case of this movie, I don't think it was because the person was trans, but maybe it was. I don't know. I think it was I need to you know, identify as a man to, you know, advance the plot. But God, so many trans guys love that movie. So I would say you've got your coded characters and then you got your queer allegories.
Yes, the allegories are an important piece too. Anyone else?
Can we talk about the stereotypes that that have been played in and that Hollywood insists, and well, not so much now, but certainly in the past, Hollywood insisted on for LGBTQ characters. If they were open, they were open in their sexuality, they often paid a very steep price, up to and including death, for being who they were. As you mentioned, Leah and Lynn in Brokeback Mountain, I feel that that was a perfect example of paying the price for being gay. And in Call Me By Your Name, another show that just, God, it was just so sad, really. And there's so many versions of that. Even in places where, you know, it didn't even matter that the person was queer, they just had to give them some kind of misery.
Carol, I think Carol also kind of fits into that framework.
Yeah.
People have seen that because, you know, ultimately, in order to gain this relationship, she lost her child. I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying that. But Tristan, I do want to say about Brokeback Mountain, that to me, I see another light to that, which is not that those characters paid a price for being who they were. To me, it was they paid a price for not living truly as who they could have been.
It's Donald speaking. I'm going to show my age here, but I'm not sure if anyone will remember the Batman TV series with Adam West, and they had a character in it called Chief Screaming Chicken, and he was flamboyant, and he was also an actor who turned out to be gay in real life. Also in the TV series of the Superman, the actor that played Superman, this is way back in the days when it was black and white, folks. He was also turned out to be a gay person in real life. I just can't remember his name. But the Batman thing was funny because the Chief Screaming Chicken, he played it to be a very flamboyant part.
I just thought of another coded character In The Little Mermaid, Ursula, the sea witch, was totally modeled after Divine, who was a character created by John Waters. And I forgot the name of the person who played Divine, but it was sort of like that coded, you know, a very, very queer character. Lots of Disney movies, like Scar from The Lion King, was definitely, you know, queer coded.
And Jafar from Aladdin with that robe.
Jafui from Aladdin.
Yes, yes, exactly. So there's just like...
Or not Aladdin. Well, he wasn't Aladdin. I apologize. Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a character, Jafar in Aladdin, I think. Most
there
of
you
the
go.
Yes, the mustache-twirling, flamboyant villain.
And that robe usually, of Jafar? And, I mean, come on.
You know, I think that's sort of why society has this weird, uneasy feeling about gay people, is that they keep coding us as villains. And then, well,
even
God,
Dr. Claw from the Inspector Gadget movie, played by Rupert Everett, who actually is gay. But, like, the way that he played Dr. Claw, again, was that sort of outrageous, kind of flamboyant character.
The movie Into the Woods, the movie version, the two princes are obviously after each other when you see them acting. It's pretty clear. Prince, was it Prince Valiant or Prince Charming? Ooh, baby.
Right. And, you know, it is such a shame that we do fall into that villain stereotype so often, particularly with the Disney movies, because so many of those Disney movies from the 90s meant so much to a lot of us, and to me in particular. Like you were talking about with Ursula, I was going to bring that up about the one of the stereotypes is always being coded as a villain, and it's such a shame that they did make Ursula so evil. Now that I look back on the Little Mermaid story, I like to rewrite it in my head and think about it as Ursula being a wise aunt and just warning Ariel what was ahead and trying to convince her to stay and learn magic or whatever she has to teach. And one thing that I do think we've come a long way these days with, Disney has certainly introduced a few good witches to us in the last few years. The one I can think of right off the top of my head is Mama Odie from Tiana, where she's actually the good character stirring her gumbo, trying to see the future in her gumbo pot. Gumbo, gumbo, show me the way! Or something like that that she said. And then there was another one recently, but I can't think of it.
Well, with Disney, let's talk for a second about, we have to, giving them credit. I mean, let's talk about, there was a show on Disney Channel called Andy Mack that was... I don't remember. I think it was probably about 6 years ago. And it was about a middle school girl who lived with her grandfather and her mom. And eventually, I guess, she finds out who her dad is. And there's a thing, there's a whole plot with that. But her and her best friend Cyrus and their other friends in middle school, well, Cyrus eventually comes out as gay. And that was huge, huge. And it actually inspired the actor who played Cyrus to actually search himself, and he came out as bi. And that's pretty impressive, that a character that he played would help him to discover something about himself. And I think that's pretty great.
Yes, that is very good. And following on the Disney theme, The Owl House was such a good show. I am so, so mad that it just poof disappeared one day from Disney Plus, and it's no longer there.
That's because, unfortunately, and they took away the episodes regarding Cyrus from Andy Mack on Disney Plus as well, because they are attempting to appeal to markets where being gay is still a crime, like in the Sub-Saharan Africa and Middle East and in China, and so they just decided, nope, we're just going to take them off.
You would think that they would have a filter for regions, or you would think that they would have a self-selectable filter to just filter it out so that the rest of us enlightened folks of the world could enjoy it.
Well, I'm sure if Ron DeSantis had his way, he would filter it from Florida too, though. So before we get too advanced on that.
Anyone else have anything to share? What would you all like to tell Hollywood about the best representation of us in moving forward?
There was a movie that recently came out that was originally a project of Blue Sky Studios, which was a subsidiary of 20th Century Fox. And they scrapped it, and Netflix ended up buying it, and they finished it, and it's called Nimona. And I think it's been nominated for some awards. It really made a big splash, and it's on Netflix, so you can watch it there. It's about a shape-shifting kid who partners up with a knight, and it takes place in a science fiction fantasy world, so it's sort of like a mixture of both. And a lot of non-binary and trans people identify with Nimona because of the shape-shifting, and there's a lot of like gender flexing, I guess, like different genders and different shapes and things. A lot of transformation stuff that really resonates with a lot of non-binary and trans people. So that was another one that I thought of when you were talking about Disney.
I'm sure that'll be good. I've seen that in my queue a few times.
A good representation, a modern representation, I think. And I was very proud to do the description for it. It was a movie from IFC called Monica. It was really well done. A trans woman comes home after her mother had kicked her out for being trans. Her brother called her home to help him take care of their mother, who was experiencing memory lapses and was gravely ill. And Monica struggled with that. Whether she should even come home. And when she came back, her mother essentially didn't recognize her. And that's the beginning of the movie. I'm not giving you anything, no spoilers at all. In a way, it was kind of, because her mother didn't recognize her, it was a way to kind of recreate a new relationship between them. And it was really interesting. And, you know, obviously Monica had a lot of internal struggle, and there was a lot of processing that had to happen. But it felt very authentic in a way that, as a non-trans person, I can't speak to that, but it sure was powerful. And I would love to hear what Bryn thinks of that movie when you have the chance to view it. It's really quite good.
Yeah, I kind of forgot that you had mentioned it to me, and I really want to see it. So thanks for mentioning it, and I may have to make that happen tonight.
Just, I'm going to step in maybe a little off topic, but there was a movie series that I saw a number of years ago with my partner. And it was, I think it's called Donald Strachey. And it's a policeman, a detective, and his husband.
Yes, that aired on here in the U.S. It aired on Logo. It was quite good. It was a really interesting, well, first of all, I'm a sucker for any mystery series, but the Donald Strachey series is quite good, both in book form and in the television series. We just had Hannah join us.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Hannah. Thank you for joining us. We've just been sharing a lot about our favorite movies and TV shows and what we think about the representation. A little bit if we saw queer coding in some, or the writing, what the various studios have done with various content. In terms of a movie or a show, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I wanted to give you a chance to share if you wanted to. Is there a movie or a show or two that you felt were inspiring to you as a person, or that you felt was good representation, or gave you a role model of someone that you wanted to be?
I've been thinking and thinking about for days, and I'm not really ready right now. The first thing that I can think of is Frozen. It's not really about being LGBTQ+, but the first Frozen movie is like just letting go of the stuff that that inhibits you, and I think a lot of people can relate to that, at least here.
Right. I am a big fan of Frozen. Cheesy as that makes me, I don't care. whether one is LGBT or not, I think we can all relate to the wrapping oneself up in staying behind the expectations of other people and society, and that being very stifling and inhibiting our ability to connect to other people. And then when she finally gets out in the woods and is able to finally let it all out, that's the moment when a lot of us just can't hold back anymore. And, you know, a lot of the Disney songs appear to me to be queer anthems. I mean, come on. Let it go. Let it go. I mean, that's a coming out anthem if I ever heard one. But I can also see it as whatever one has been holding in, letting it out and finding people that you can express it to or ways that you can express it is very important and very valuable.
Yeah, exactly.
We're kind of winding down a little bit. I don't know if there was anything else that you maybe wanted to share, but feel free to chime in or jump in as we go along. I just kind of wanted to ask everyone a final question of what do you want to tell Hollywood moving forward in terms of representation? What do you need for Hollywood to hear?
More very well-built hairy men.
Well, I will say I'm very happy to see more trans people in TV, but I really wish there was more. It does sometimes feel like I really have to scrape the sides of the barrel to find it. And it's not always even clear that the characters are trans or non-binary or any shape of queer at all. I want characters who are trans, but I want it to not be the focal point of the movie or TV show necessarily, right? Sure, let's bring in some of the things that are unique to them and make that part of the story, but also just have them be a person in the world and not necessarily always just focus in on their transness. So there was a movie that did it really well called Bit, B-I-T, and Nicole Maines plays the main character in that movie. And it's a lesbian vampires movie. You know, it's about this moody teenager who moves to the big city and gets bit and becomes, you know, part of the vampire crew. And the only reason I knew that she was trans is because I remembered her from Supergirl as Dreamer. You know, she was a superhero who was trans in Supergirl. But they didn't mention that she was trans in the movie at all. They mentioned that, you know, she went through a period in her life where she was miserable and suicidal. And, you know, the brother was like, you know, I watched you go through that. And I remember, you know, what you get like when things aren't right. And I don't think things are right again. Like, what's going on? You have to talk to me. And I was like, oh, that's because she was trans. And when she was, you know, in the before times, oh my God. So anyway, I guess what I'm getting at is please add trans characters. Don't code it. Don't hide it. But it doesn't always have to be, oh my God, it's a queer character. Look at this queer character and all the queer things they do. You know, they can just be an average, everyday, normal person like everybody else.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Sure. For me, what I would like to see more of is no more coding. Don't code it. Let people, as Bryn said, just live in the world, whether they're trans or gay or lesbian or non-binary or whatever it is, you know, just let them be who they are. It doesn't have to feature. It doesn't have to, you know, we don't have to have the whole story based around it unless that's actually plot pertinent. But just, you know, have it be. And more importantly to me, actually, all of these desires I have could also be applied to blind people in representation. Just having a blind character without necessarily having to go into why they're blind and look at what they've overcome and aren't they inspired? And I don't want to hear any more of that. Just let them be the blind accountant or the blind guy behind the desk answering the phone or the blind computer coder or whatever it is. It's the same situation. It's almost exactly the same in the way that things are dealt with in Hollywood. It doesn't always have to be the focus of the story. And more importantly, LGBT actors should be playing LGBT roles. I'm not saying that LGBT actors can't play straight roles. We have for decades, probably centuries. But when you have a role that is meant to be LGBT, let LGBT actors play those roles and let blind actors play roles that are blind coded.
And you know what? It would be even cooler if you guys really want to make us happy in Hollywood. How about add a blind trans character or a blind lesbian character or a blind gay character? Yeah, that would be great to have like real representation.
How come the only blind gay character I actually know of anywhere in media is the Brazilian kid? Where's Hollywood on this? Why does it have to be that way? It doesn't.
Yep.
Thanks everyone for sharing on Pride Connection. Representation really is important, and I do hope we keep moving this conversation forward.
Another Friday night. Brother spent an hour in the bathroom making himself look pretty for a date at the drive-in, and sister's got her hot rod all fixed up for a night of drag racing. After a hard week working at the plant, Mom just wants to sit down and watch television with Dad. So what does that leave you to do? Say, why not go hang out at the clubhouse? The good folks of Blind LGBT Pride host a Friday night fun chat every week, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Just pick up your phone and join the party line. That is, log on to Clubhouse, search for House Blind LGBT Pride, and join in for a fun night of good conversation and good company. Don't worry if you're not yet a member. Blind Pride welcomes all those with loving hearts and open minds. So what are you waiting for? Grab your favorite snacks, log on to Clubhouse, and join Blind LGBT Pride's Friday Night Fun Chat. Be there or be square.
I've heard it
too. You have been listening to Pride Connection, sponsored by Blind LGBT Pride International. For more information, go to our website at bpi.gay.
Someday we'll find it, the Rainbow Connection.